My guest at this time is former federal prosecutor Andrew C. McCarthy. He is also a contributing editor at National Review, where he has written extensively about the memo from Republicans on the House Intelligence Committee. We want to get some of his thoughts on that, as well as what to expect next. And Andy, thanks so much for being with us.
Greg, my pleasure.
So let's get to the kind of the meat of the memo here. If, in fact, the dossier from Christopher Steele, done by Fusion GPS and paid for by the Clinton campaign and the DNC, was the primary basis for obtaining the FISA warrant on Carter Page, did the FBI or DOJ do anything criminal if, in fact, they presented the dossier as evidence, even though it had not been verified in October of 2016, and even though they allegedly failed to tell the court it was paid for by Democrats?
I doubt that they've committed a criminal offense. I think it's more likely, Greg, that what they've done is, you know, violate court rules and norms for the Justice Department's performance when it refers evidence to the court and asks for use of the court's processes like warrants and the like. But that generally, unless it really rises to an egregious level of obstruction of justice, and this wouldn't even be so much obstruction of justice as a kind of perversion of justice, but usually that is not something that is addressed by the criminal law, although it's a very serious matter and can be grist for all kinds of administrative discipline as well as impeachment.
So it's more unethical than anything that would fall in the code.
Well, I think it falls. I always separate out, even though there's overlap between them, abuse of power and criminal conduct. There are some varieties of abuse of power that we address in the criminal law, but there are many we don't. That doesn't mean the abuses of power are less serious than crimes.
Andy, ultimately, is this going to hinge on what exactly Andrew McCabe said and whether he actually said there would be no warrant without the dossier?
That's obviously a very important part of it, Greg. It's very hard to make a judgment about what our ultimate assessment of this will hinge on, because this is all happening under the kind of black box of classified information. Unlike other scandals that we've had in the past involving, presidential administrations and special counsels and, all this kind of stuff that we've seen in the last year or so, this is all taking place under the cone of intelligence. So, just to compare, Watergate was a crime, and there were crimes involved in the cover-up. Iran-Contra was something that was very public, exactly what happened, the criminal aspect of it, the abuse of power aspect of it. This is one of these situations where what we're discussing is even different from the Hillary Clinton investigation, which, even though it was about classified emails to a large extent, it was a criminal investigation. So a lot of it was more out in the open, whereas FISA, that is interceptions and surveillance under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, is top secret stuff. So it's very hard to get information. Even when it's obvious that we need information, the government fights giving it to us on the grounds that to reveal what people want to know about runs the risk of exposing national defense secrets and methods and sources of gathering intelligence. And the problem we all have trying to assess all that is that it's certainly true that we have to have secrecy in order to protect important national defense interests. And at the same time, the classified information, the secret nature of it, is a very tempting thing for the government to conceal information that's not necessarily important to the national security so much as it could be embarrassing or even illegal for government officials. So it makes it much more complicated and difficult.
Well, let me have you prioritize then. You've written in a piece over the weekend that we actually know only a tiny fraction of the information probably needed to piece this all together in a fair way. So what's the critical information we still haven't seen that you think we might actually get to see and is critical to really seeing the whole picture here?
Well, to bounce off what you asked about before with respect to McCabe, there's a dispute now between the people who put out the Nunez memo, which is the professional staff on the committee on the Republican side, and the Democrats on the committee, who are disputing whether McCabe testified that without the information in the so-called Steele dossier, there could not have been a FISA warrant to do surveillance on this guy Carter Page, who had been a Trump foreign policy advisor. So we need to get to the bottom of that, but we should talk about why it's important. It's important because if they had other information that would have supported the issuance of a FISA warrant, then the use of the Steele dossier is much less important. But if the Steele dossier was critical to getting the warrant issued, that means that the government brought to a court information that was unverified and uncorroborated in order to get surveillance authority, in essence, to spy on one presidential campaign with what turns out to be opposition research that was provided to the government by the other presidential campaign.
We're talking with Andy McCarthy, former federal prosecutor, contributing editor at National Review and National Review Online. And Andy, we're probably going to get to see at least the Democratic counter memo here. What do you expect from that, in addition to perhaps what you just talked about, perhaps some indication that there might have been additional evidence to warrant the warrant, for lack of a better phrase?
Yeah, well, what I hope will be in the Democratic memo is, to the extent that they say that additional context is needed to put put more light on the disturbing elements that we've seen in the Nunez memo, that they will try to provide that context. What I'm afraid of is that it will just be a partisan political attack. The reason I say that, Greg, is not just because they're Democrats and that's what they do, although I must say on some level I do believe that. But the other reason I'm fearful of it is they were invited by the majority of the Intelligence Committee to make additions or changes to the Nunez memo. And they really didn't want to cooperate in it. I think they really just wanted to attack it in a partisan way. But if there was this context that they say is necessary in order to understand what Nunez has put out there, they had an opportunity to suggest that and get it included in the memo. And the fact that they didn't do that suggests to me either that it doesn't exist or that they would rather package it in a way that was more of a partisan attack than an effort to get out one document that more fully explained what it is we're dealing with.
Two quick questions before we let you go. Andy, you wrote over the weekend about a response to a rebuttal to the memo from Congressman Nadler, member of the House Judiciary Committee, longtime Democratic congressman from Manhattan. And you do a very fair job of going both ways in this, and kind of the confirmation bias that was the main reaction to this memo, because on the Democratic side, Nadler and others are assuming this is all just a way to lead up to the firing of Bob Mueller or the firing of Rod Rosenstein, even though Trey Gowdy, the principal author, along with the investigators from the committee, says, that's not his read of this at all. And at the same time, you've got Trump defenders saying, well, kind of wash their hands of it and say, well, this is clearly evidence that the Mueller investigation is a sham and it does need to end, which is also not what Trey Gowdy said this weekend. So what do you make of the instant leaping to conclusions here?
Well, I really think that it's unfortunate that a lot of Trump defenders are using the Nunez memo to attack the legitimacy of Mueller's investigation. But on the other hand, to be fair to them, I really think it's the fault of the FBI and the Justice Department that they're taking that position. And the reason I say that is when what is now Mueller's investigation was first publicly announced, and this is 2 months before Mueller came on the scene, the FBI said that it was conducting a counterintelligence investigation into Russia's interference with the election, and that as a sideline of that investigation, it was going to look into any potential coordination between the Trump campaign and the Kremlin, and that if they found any crimes, they'd make an assessment of that at the end. To me, that was a completely inappropriate thing to say publicly, because the FBI and the Justice Department should never comment on whether investigations are going on, and if they are going on, what's going on in them, what the focus of them is. The government's not supposed to talk about investigations. But I think that the real problem is that by doing it the way they did it, they conflated in the public mind the overarching Mueller mission, which is to investigate Russian interference in our election and whatever threat Russia poses, conflated that with this whole idea of a Trump-Russia collusion angle. And since in the public mind those two things are the same, then it's perfectly understandable that people would say that if the Trump-Russia collusion angle is a complete fabrication, and that a lot of it was built on this dossier, that Mueller's investigation is illegitimate. Now, I don't think that's true, but I can see why they feel that way, and they feel that way because of what the FBI and the Justice Department gratuitously said about this investigation, which was very misleading and very wrong.
Last question for you, Andy. I can see this going either way or perhaps neither way here. Some people will think that this is evidence of an increasingly politicized law enforcement system and judicial system at the federal level. Others think, hey, more sunshine on this. Maybe we'll see less of that in the future. Do you have any early gut instinct on that?
Well, I do think that we have to recognize that because of the nature of the 2016 election, the Democrats, and this was their choice, they nominated somebody who was under criminal investigation. And the Republicans nominated somebody who had people in his campaign, at the very least, who had disturbing ties to Russia, and Trump himself was a candidate who made a lot of disturbing remarks about Russia, you know, ridiculously ingratiating remarks about Russia. So I think that, unfortunately, the Bureau and the Justice Department, whether they wanted it or not, were kind of thrust into the campaign through no fault of their own. That's the way it worked. And they made some missteps, and there's no question in my mind, at least, that they made some missteps. That doesn't mean that this unusual set of events is going to recur in the future, and that we can't get back to some kind of normalcy where we don't enmesh our law enforcement people in politics. But, you know, the Obama administration really did, in a very serious way, politicize law enforcement and intelligence and things like the IRS, and we're living with the consequences of that. And if people feel that they can't trust these institutions because they become politicized, that's not the product of rhetoric. That's something that really happened.
A lot to look at here, and as you have suggested in your writings, Andy, a lot more that we don't know right now than we do know. I believe there's probably a Rumsfeld quote that would apply to our situation at the moment.
Right. So. Right. The known knowns, known unknowns, right, unknown unknowns.
Exactly. So we'll definitely be keeping an eye on it, and I'm sure we'll have the chance to visit again. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Greg.
Andrew C. McCarthy, former federal prosecutor, contributing editor at National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.